copyright forum of Christian leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I'm going to go through this now. As with virtually everything I speak about, I know very little about this, okay? And what that means is, if you're an art expert and you'll hear me say something, you go, no, that's not right. My only qualification for speaking on this is I really, really like art. And I love Jesus and I connect the two, okay? And you may look at this and go, that was rubbish. When it comes to questions and answers, you're allowed to say whatever you want. Honestly, I don't mind. I've given lectures in art colleges, which is really ridiculous. Because, as I say, I know very, very little. But if you've got a brass neck, as they say, you can get away with anything. So, let's look at this. Ask simply, what is art? I gave a lecture in an art college once, and there was an art student there, and she said, how dare you say some art is bad art? There's no such thing as bad art. So I said to her, okay, fair enough. Is there such a thing as art at all? And she thought about it, and she said, no, not really. I said, well, you got a big problem, and your parents have got an even bigger problem. She says, what's that? I said, you're studying an art degree. You're studying a subject which doesn't exist. And your parents are paying a lot of money for you to be here to study something that doesn't exist. Her tutor was behind her getting madder and madder at the whole thing. But what is art? You know, we have a fancy contemporary arts gallery. I like contemporary art. Sometimes this stuff is brilliant, but sometimes you go in and there's a can of baked beans in the middle of the floor and everyone goes, wow, that's really profound. No, it's not. It's a can of beans in the middle of the floor. That's it. That's all it is. It's not profound. It's a can of beans in the middle of the floor. Now, as I say, I actually like a lot of contemporary art. But when we're asking, what is art? I think a lot of us know, or kind of think that we know, but it can be quite difficult to actually define. I'm using it here in the sense of making a pictorial representation of something, whether it's an actual thing or whether it's feelings and so on. You'll see what that means. Is there such a thing as Christian art? Is there such a thing as Christian music? Is there such a thing as a Christian building? Is there such a thing as a Christian potato? Maybe. What makes it Christian art? Is it the fact that it's paintings of Jesus on the cross? Is that Christian art? If you're an artist who is a Christian, do you always have to include a wee scripture verse? I really struggle with the whole idea of Christian art. And I have to say, I can struggle with the whole idea of Christian music or Christian literature or anything. I happen to think that art is art. And I think you can have good art, you can have bad art, you can have art that is putting forward a good message, you can have art that's putting forward a bad message, you can have art that's putting forward a message, you go, nobody has a clue what this message is, including the artist. But I question whether there's such a thing as Christian art. So that's one thing to think about. Now, what I want to do is just demonstrate how I would use the whole question of art. I did this a while ago when I went to an art society and gave a lecture on art. And as I say, I know very, very little. But there's a marvelous book, Hans Rugmacher, Modern Art and the Death of a Culture, which is an absolutely superb book. And he got me thinking about a lot of stuff. And in particular, I began thinking about Picasso, and I gave his lectures on some artists that I actually like. The only reason they're in here is because I actually like them, okay? It's entirely subjective. But I love Picasso. Now, the interesting thing about Picasso is, you can see some of the paintings there. Picasso was a really good painter. I don't mind modern art if it's done by somebody who can actually paint. When someone who can't paint does art and then says, this is wonderful, I kind of struggle with that a wee bit. But Picasso was an absolutely wonderful painter. And you can see some of the things that are in him. Right at the first stage, if you like, the early years. He's basically a classical painter. He's not gone along the route of Cézanne and others. And then there's this blue period. And I'm quite smart, and I worked out it's because everything's got blue in it. And that also is, again, fascinating. Things begin to change, shapes begin to change. There's something going on in his head. And then comes, going through this very quickly, his rose period. And again, you can see he's drawing more figurines. He's asking all kinds of questions. What's happening? And then for me, Picasso is one of the great heroes of art because he's incredibly honest. He goes a route that I think many, many people wouldn't go. I find a lot of artists that I would know today, they do things, the art world has become incredibly commercialized. Picasso, towards the end of his life, painted pictures just for money, but he'd given up. It was very, very sad. His African period, he took on this idea that there was the kind of noble savage, that Europeans had fallen away and that we needed to get back to some kind of spiritism or spirituality that could be found in more, as they would put it, more primitive tribes in Africa. And you see that reflected, and particularly he's thinking of the female shape. And then his Cubist period, and that's where things really begin to change for him in so many ways. And you can see what we would now recognize much of contemporary art. And you'll notice that instead of objects and subjects, it's basically blocks, hence the term Cubism. Now I want to take you on to the Surrealist period, and especially his Neoclassicist and Surrealist period, and especially, if I can find it, where did I put it? Yeah, this was the one I'm most interested in, is how he develops. So you see the developments there, the blue, the classical, the blue, the Cubist, and here just almost the grotesque. Now, it's the third picture, especially, that is the most phenomenally influential picture. It's called Demoiselle d'Avignon, and it's known as the philosophical brothel. And what he does in this is he paints naked women, except he doesn't. It's not immoral at all. It is amoral. He's using the African image. He's trying to create this idea. Their faces don't really matter. Their bodies are kind of distorted. And I think that he's becoming towards, he's as he goes through that, he's developing towards that. By the time you get to this, 1968, he's just saying everything's absurd. It's just absurd. It doesn't make any sense. And he did. He gave up. Picasso tried to search for what he called the one. There's got to be something. And after the 1907 painting is really, really key, because he's really saying there's this whole brothel of philosophies. And they're all pointless. You can't find the one. Their life has no meaning. And that is enormously influential in European culture. Now, I would argue that there's a group in Germany after this called the Blaue Reiter, Blue Riders. They put forward an expression following this, the Cubists and others as well. I would argue that they led the culture. They were ahead of the culture. The artists were way ahead. You get postmodernist artists about 50 years before you get postmodernist writers, really. I would argue that today, artists don't lead the culture. I think artists are servants of the culture. Artists go, you know, particularly again in contemporary art, you've got to, if you're, you know, an executive of Google or something, you're going to go to New York and you're going to spend $10 million on someone who you're told is really cool. It's the art market. Damien Hirst, the British artist, sold a cow in thalidomide for $10 million. It was a cow in thalidomide. And he did the same with a shark. I mean, Tracy Emin sold her bed, her unmade bed. I'll sell you my unmade bed for a whole lot cheaper than she sold it. But nonetheless, people say, well, this is art and we've got to buy it and so on. I think these guys, Picasso especially, were leaders. I think where they led was ultimately disastrous. I love looking at Picasso's paintings, but by the time you get to the 1930s, you think this guy has just given up. And I think that is reflected in his paintings. Again, you just see that through. You see the classical one, you see the kind of religious invocations and everything else that comes on with that. And then I want to go on to Van Gogh, who's just totally fascinating in lots and lots of different ways. Not least, his brother was a very, very strong evangelical Christian, And he himself would have espoused to be an evangelical Christian. Everyone knows him because he's mad and he cut off his ear. Well, he wasn't mad. Just had a very sore ear. But no, I don't think he was mad at all. I think he went through different periods in terms of his life. The great thing for me about Van Gogh, though, was what he tried to do. Cézanne, who he was influenced by, said, "You should only paint what the eyes see. But the world is absurd." Van Gogh changed, and he argued that you should paint. He moved again. He developed his thing. You should paint what you feel. I'll come back to Kandinsky, sorry. So you paint feelings. How do you paint feelings? Well, what Van Gogh does is he uses incredibly bright colors. A little bit distorted, but he uses bright colors, very strong images, but it's meant to convey, it's using color to convey feeling. And for me, it actually works. I go and I look at a Van Gogh painting and I get the feeling. It's like, for me in music, we're going to look at the music one in a wee while, but in music, if I listen to Beethoven, I get what Beethoven is writing about. Well, when I watch Van Gogh, I get what he's on about. This is really one of my favorite painters, Kandinsky, and there's a reason why he's one of my favorite painters. Basically, I like him. But he's my favorite expressionist. Now, the expressionists have this idea there's no definite philosophy, there's no definite rules, and so on. Kandinsky said this: "We must destroy the soulless materialistic life of the 19th century, and we must build the life of the spirit and soul of the 20th century." And what he does, you look at his paintings for long enough, try as you can, you will not find any subject matter. Because he didn't believe you should be painting any particular subject. And again, it's just a way of saying life is completely absurd. Now, you see in our culture how that becomes exemplified in the 1960s and so on. With Timothy Leary, people start taking a whole lot of different kinds of drugs. Because life is absurd, life is surreal, life has no real meaning. Kandinsky, the reason I like Kandinsky, I mean, I like the way he paints, I like his pictures. I went to the Metropolitan in New York. No, it's not the Met, there's another one. That has a whole floor of Kandinsky paintings, and it was closed when I went there, so I was really upset. But it's very, very urban work. And again, from a Christian perspective, it's actually pretty hopeless. There is no subject. And then here's another one I really like. Jewish painter, Chagall. Sorry, get that out of the way. Chagall, I first came across Chagall. I didn't know who Chagall was or anything like that. And I was walking along the street in New York, and the American Bible Society said, "Our exhibition." I thought, "Oh, well, why not? Let's go in. It's free." So I went in, and I couldn't believe the paintings. I thought they were wonderful. And they were all by this guy, Chagall. So I bought a book. Art books are really expensive. I bought one, and I began reading about Chagall. And again, I was really, really delighted that what I saw in his paintings was what was reflected in his life. So in terms of kind of understanding art and understanding where we're at, I think that we can come to pictures like this, come to pictures like Picasso, you can go to some of the more obviously classical pictures, the Dutch masters, especially ask how did Calvinism influence them? Would you have had the Dutch masters without Calvinism? I doubt it. And yet why in a country like Scotland, which is also Calvinistic, did people turn against the whole idea of imagery and art? But I do think art is incredibly powerful, and it's everywhere. You see it everywhere. One of the things I miss in music about the old albums, and some of you are far too young to even remember that unless you go clubbing and you see them, but there was the art covers that came, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, for example. What a fantastic cover and a great album. You travel into Groningen in the Netherlands, and as you're approaching from the south, you will notice a building, which is the building of the headquarters of the Dutch gas company. And as you look at it, you know, there's something unusual about that building. And then you realize it has no right angles whatsoever, inside or out. Now you think of how much effort it takes to make a building with no right angles. And it was trying to make a particular expression. You see art everywhere. First time I went to Bulgaria, I went to Sofia, I thought, my goodness, I wouldn't want to live in this place because there were just blocks and blocks and blocks of monotone flats. Romania was the same. And I like, you know, the way that art, it comes in architecture, it comes in music, it comes in every part of our life, it comes in terms of our clothes. Why did they sell so many products? It wasn't just the fact they were perceived as cool. It wasn't the fact that they worked, which really helped. It was also artistically, they were very, very well designed. So I think art's important in that. Sorry, that's just more of Chagall. I love that guy. Art and evangelism, how do we do it? For me, this is so hugely important. It's the apologetic of beauty. Art and evangelism doesn't mean that you've always got to paint, you know, a text. I once heard somebody say this. I thought it was so true. Romans 8, God works all things together for the good of those who love him. Why is that put on a poster with lambs skipping in a field? It looks nice. It sounds nice. You know what that should be over? If you're going to make a poster of that, it should be over the picture of a dead baby. God works all things together for the good of those who love him. That's tough going. But that's what it's about. It's not, we've turned art, I mean, you ever read the Jehovah's Witnesses magazines? I don't read them. But their art is just, bleh, it's just kitsch, it's just awful. And I see Christian versions of that as well. I mean, I would hate to see a Christian art that you'd go, oh yeah, that's Christian. And because it was just so nyaff. I don't know how to, but that's a Scottish word, I think. It's just awful. But there's an apologetic of beauty. Something is beautiful. I know somebody who was converted because they saw a fantastic painting in France, which was about hell, and he was an atheist. He certainly didn't believe in hell. And as he looked at it, he thought, one, that is beautiful. Two, that is ugly. Three, that's me. That's where I'm going. And he became a Christian. In fact, he was the brother of Christopher Hitchens, Peter Hitchens. There's an apologetic of suffering. I think really good art, right, really good music, addresses the question of suffering. It has to. How do you explain your pain? You can explain it in words, but those words will themselves be artistic. Ruth mentioned the Book of Job. Why is that book of suffering in poetic form? It's the only way that you can communicate pain. And I think you can communicate pain through art, and I think you can communicate pain through music as well. And there's an apologetic of creativity. That is hugely important, that people see a creativity reflecting the creator. So that is a very, very, very brief, intended, provocative sign, which is saying, look, let's use art. Let's think about art. Don't pretend to like art. Just look at different kinds of art. Decide what you like. For me personally, I do actually like visiting art galleries and thinking about what's been done there and thinking about... I must admit, I've never visited an art gallery, which for me did not ask spiritual questions and point me towards Jesus Christ in some way or other. But that may be my particular twisted mind. It may not be everyone else's. But I would just say that it's a fantastic apologetic that we can use, and I would encourage you to use it.